Hi, listeners of the 45th, Rabia here, and I have a personal favor to ask you. We are reliant on advertising as a way not only to keep the show for free, but also just to keep coming back and produce it week after week. So we need a favor from you guys. If you could please go to the following URL, it's podcastlistener.com/45, and answer just a few short questions. Just take this really short survey. It is really going to be helpful for us. It's going to help us tailor the advertising we bring to you to showcase products that you guys are interested in. Again, that's podcastlistener.com/45. Just this one time. Thank you so very much.
There's the big board, the 20 electoral votes from the state of Pennsylvania. We just got new metrics in.
The inauguration of a president celebrates a peaceful transition of power engineered by the American voters.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th, listeners. I am Rabia Jother. I'm here this week with my colleague and co-host, Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia. So, big day today, huh?
It's been a busy, busy day. It's Monday, by the way, for our listeners.
For the record, we are doing a very last-minute recording in light of today's excitement.
Yes, we are recording this late on a Monday so we could get in today's big news. You know, when the indictments were announced on Friday, we're like, okay, I guess we'll wait till Monday to record. So that's what's happening. The bulk of our show today, the bulk of our talk is going to be about the indictments and the arrests today. Were they arrests? Are they considered arrests when you turn yourself in? I don't know how that works. They surrender themselves, right? But the charges, we're going to go into all that, but I wanted to actually briefly address it. So I was not on the show last week, but I did listen to it, Susan. And you and Siraj and Tom had a really interesting the whole conversation was very interesting. But there was something particular about it that triggered some of our listeners, and we got a lot of feedback on it. You want to refresh folks about what that was?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are parts that I was not entirely happy with myself, to be honest. And I think in particular, a lot of the listener reaction was to the discussion on the chief of staff's comments about... out of nowhere, about how women are no longer sacred and they used to be regarded with honor.
Yeah. And then like your conversation went on about, you made the absolute valid point that what are you talking about? Women in general obviously have much more access, have much more freedom, empowerment and all those things like today than we obviously could have or would have enjoyed, you know, in the time of our mothers and grandmothers and all that. But Siraj and Tom, they thought of it in a very different way. And it did, when I listened to it, I did cringe. It did come across as sexist.
Short-sighted and completely wrong.
And short-sighted completely. But here's another way that I'm thinking about this, though. I'm not saying that, and it's probably because I was raised in such a conservative community and family and environment, and even religiously conservative. So I'm going to give you an example of, I'm not even kidding, this is actually true. One way that Muslims, when they're very young, are taught about why women should like cover. I mean, it is a totally reprehensible way to even think about this is the following. We are taught, like one way they try to convince you that this is what you should be doing is they say women are these pearls. They're these sacred, beautiful gems. And if you had a gem, you wouldn't just throw it around the street. You keep it covered. You keep it hidden. This is literally a method. And they actually sincerely believe it. And I think that extends into other conservative communities. Like when I was talking to my husband about this today, I was like, this is what Kelly said, and Thomas Raj kind of agreed with him, and my husband is like, well, wouldn't most conservatives, those are the kinds of things that make you conservative, right? I mean, retrogressive ideas about women.
I would hope that's not makes you conservative.
Not makes you conservative, but I think it is part of conservative thinking.
Well, that aside, the factual statement that women had more rights or had it better in the 50s shows a complete lack of understanding of anything regarding women's rights.
I mean, it's did someone
insane
say that?
Idea. Yes.
Okay, that's factually completely inaccurate.
Insane.
But I will say this. So I think the irony of this entire thing is this. I think the kernel of truth there is this, that the person that Kelly works for, that he might not have been able to get away with saying the kinds of things he does about women, 50 years ago or 40 years ago, even 30 years ago, that he did now and still be elected. Because while women were not treated as sacred, there was, I think, less... I don't think you could have gotten away with grabbing women's parts.
Wait, really? Body. Really?
Publicly saying that and being elected?
Oh, he could not say the words he did. But that's not women's rights. That's just about, like, hiding what's really going on.
No, no, right. So what I'm saying is, like, I think what they're thinking of is this semblance of respecting women publicly versus...
Exactly. Exactly.
But the irony again here is he worked for a man who's who's disgusting when it comes to women. So, like, it just is disingenuous unless he really holds a mirror up to himself and who he's working for. But I think that's what they are thinking. I think these are men and people who are projecting. They think that, you know, we used to be these people who really protected women, and this was like an honor thing, and this weird machismo. And in the meantime, women are like, yeah, we're really suffering and we have no rights. And it's very kind of ongoing. But I also wanted to say another thing, and that's this. Somebody tweeted that I wish we could trade in Siraj and Tom for Sarah. And I just want to remind listeners, we had a similar outcry, if not even greater, when Sarah was on and we talked about Planned Parenthood. And I thought Sarah had ideas that were very women unfriendly when it came to Planned Parenthood. And I feel like on some level, maybe you disagree with me, Susan, that no matter who the conservative is, and we do want to have a well-rounded conversation, we're going to keep ending up hitting ideas that don't work with us, with many of our listeners either. So that was my thought on this whole thing. The other thing I wanted to talk about quickly, only because I think it's a really, really important story, and it is really, like, kind of haunting me before we get into the big, big news today, is a story that some folks might have heard of about a 10-year-old girl. Her name is Rosa Maria Hernandez. Have you heard of this, Susan?
Yeah.
It is awful. So what happened is this. She was, I think she was a child, either 3 months old or 3 years. She was a child when her parents brought her from Mexico to the United States. She is undocumented. Her parents are undocumented. She has cerebral palsy. She's very, very ill. She has the mental capacity of a child half her age. She's 10 now. And she needed gallbladder surgery. So the story goes that she is being transported in an ambulance to the hospital to get surgery. And people might not realize this, but in America, we have Customs and Border Patrol agents, not just only on the borders. We have them in all kinds of, like, on streets and on highways and on interstates, especially in the South. And so some CBP agents stopped the ambulance. They found this girl in there. And then they followed her to the hospital. They had 5 agents stationed outside her room the entire time while she had surgery. And the minute she was done having surgery, they took her into custody.
Well, I'll do a small correction. They didn't immediately take her out. There was some recovery time allowed, as if that makes it any better.
Well, yeah, I guess as soon as she was immediately able to be moved, type of thing, right? Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. This is what's really, well, I mean, all of this is pissing me off. Number one, she's 10 years old. She has the mental ability of a 5-year-old. She also has cerebral palsy. She cannot see her family. She can't see her parents. She has not seen her parents since. She is being detained at a facility where a lot of, as most undocumented children are, with Health and Human Services. Now, it wasn't even ICE that detained her. It's Customs and Borders Patrol. So ICE is tweeting out crap like, it wasn't us. We don't do that. Come on. I mean, they're really passing the buck here. So I wanted to share this story. The ACLU has a great campaign where they are asking people to basically just make a phone call to HHS, make a phone call to these agencies. And what you do is, if you Google ACLU, Free Rosa, it shall take you to the page where you put in your phone number. It will literally dial it for you. And you can leave a message saying, you need to release this girl. I mean, she can be processed in the immigration stuff, but be at home with her parents while she's healing and while this all happens. There's just no reason for her to be away from her family. Her mother has spoken to her once by video. It's horrible.
The whole story is cruel and inhumane. And if they really have the time to do this, they clearly don't have bigger problems on their hands.
Right. I mean, this is who we are paying our tax dollar to. I mean, like, these are, like, the priority, you know, dangerous immigrants that we are trying to get rid of. It's really shameful. Another thing that can be done, by the way, it just takes one member of Congress to introduce a private bill, you know, for a specific immigrant purposes, like for humanitarian reasons, and somebody could do that. So I also urge folks to contact your, you know, legislators and say, hey, sponsor a private bill for Rosa. And, you know, there's just no national security policy reason to do this to this child. So anyway, all right, that's all I have to say about that. So, like I've mentioned in the past, I have owned my own business in a number of different capacities. I've had my own law firm. Susan, you and I now have 2 podcasts. We are co-business owners, and it's been great. But guess what? If you want, there's an amazing franchise opportunity for you and our listeners and for me and for all of us.
Like Rabia said, there are definite perks that come with owning your own business, like financial freedom, being your own boss, and having more control over your own time. But maybe you're not sure where to start. Well, one thing to check out is opening a UPS store franchise.
The thing about a franchise is this, especially one that's established, like a UPS brand. I mean, that's a brand. That is a worldwide established brand, is that you're not starting from scratch, right? Starting your own business is hard, especially when it's like an unknown quantity. But a UPS franchise is not that at all. They've got over 35 years of franchising experience, and they were just ranked the number 4 top franchise to own by Entrepreneur Magazine's 2017 Franchise 500 list. Number 4 out of 500. That's no joke.
The UPS store offers stability, the support and reputation of a world-renowned brand, and a proven business model with all the training and marketing support you need to make your own entrepreneurial dream come true.
They've got stores available in large and small markets all across the country, so whether you live in a big city or a small town, they still have opportunities available for you. And their franchising experts will help you find a location that is just right for you. Plus, there's special financing for those who qualify and programs for military veterans.
The time to promote yourself to business owner is now. Visit theupsstorefranchising.com/45 to get started today.
Once again, that's theupsstorefranchising.com/45.
And now on to the day's big news. The Mueller work begins. If you're listening to the show, I'm sure you're following what's happening. But today, Monday the 30th, the Mueller revealed that, first of all, he had indicted Paul Manafort, Trump's former campaign manager, and Manafort's partner, Rick Gates, who was also involved in campaign activities for Trump, and before him, previous Republican presidential candidates. And again, they were indicted for money laundering, as well as for a violation of the Foreign Agent Registration Act. There was also unsealed, however, a guilty plea has already been entered against George Papadopoulos.
In July, right?
Well, he was arrested in July, but in October recently, the plea went through. And he pled guilty to one count of basically lying to the FBI. And that wasn't because they couldn't get him for anything else. That's because he flipped. He's a full cooperator. It sounds like he's extensively cooperating. And the best deal that he could get still involved pleading to a felony.
And can you remind folks who he was, like, vis-a-vis the administration?
It's not really reminding so much as, like, appearing for the first time, because he never had a huge role.
Right. But he did publicly. He did work with a campaign during the election.
Yes, he did. Yeah. But he was like, everyone's like, who the hell is this guy? Why is he a campaign advisor for foreign policy? Because he's an energy guy with no real experience in anything that would make you want to add him to your presidential campaign team. So March 21st, Trump names him and 4 others, and one of them was Carter Page. And after that, he kind of kept low
last
profile.
Last year, in 2016,
yeah, 2016.
Right? Okay.
Low profile. So I think I was pretty surprised to see he was the one that's their first disclosed cooperator, because it turns out his role was more extensive than you would have guessed from the outside.
Well, I mean, apparently, so, you know, Mueller and his team have been interviewing, I guess, White House staff and other folks, and they interviewed him in January, and he lied to them when they interviewed him. And I think the lie was specifically about the Russia stuff, basically, right? The emails.
Yes, the Russia stuff, the whole Russia collusion thing.
Right.
And gosh, there's so much going on, probably so much more to come in the days that follow. It's hard to know where to start, but what Papadopoulos is officially guilty of, what he's pled guilty to, is that when the FBI interviewed him on the 26th, which is basically the same time that Trump was calling Comey and saying, I need loyalty.
Right. It was like the same day, apparently.
Yeah. And what it's also clear is that at the time of this interview, the FBI already knew something. They already had documents. They already had emails. They knew why they were talking to this guy. And this guy somehow thought they didn't know what they were asking him about. So they ask him, first of all, about conversations he had with some Russian-connected foreign nationals. And he says, yeah, I did talk to some, you know, Russian foreign nationals or people with Russian ties. But all that was before the election, before the campaign. I didn't know Trump then. It was nothing to do with anything about that. No big deal. And the FBI says, okay, remember, lying to us could be really bad for you. It's also a crime. Don't do that. Here's your liquor rights. But George Papadopoulos continues on. So a month later, they go and talk to him again. This time he has an attorney, and they're like, well, this could be a problem here. You need to give some more answers. So they talk again. And then that day, or the next day, he went and deleted his Facebook in which he communicated with foreign nationals. about...
Wait a minute. He did on like what, Facebook Messenger or something?
Yeah. Apparently Facebook Messenger is now how you do collusion with foreign powers now.
It's incredible.
And I love how in like one of the court documents, like the the U.S. specifies, like, Papadopoulos deleted his Facebook account and created a new one. The new one did not contain the messages where he talked to the foreign nationals. I'm like, well, maybe a judge doesn't know how Facebook works and needs that spelled out.
Yeah, but I can't believe that anybody in this day and age thinks you delete something and it's just gone. Are you kidding me? Like, people have no idea how this stuff works anymore. I mean, like, or at all. I mean, it's been around for like 30 years now.
I really think saying about this case from day one is that these guys, even Manafort, who's the only one who has like any kind of experience in this, don't know what they're doing. And they're
bumbling.
Idiots about covering their tracks. They're dead in the water because they've left tracks everywhere.
Yeah, they're just really bad. They're just criminals. They're bad criminals. But, you know,
the fact is, he was not smart men and things got out of hand.
Putin picked him well. One thing is, so Papadopoulos apparently, you know, stipulated to a number of facts. And one of the things in the stipulation was this, is that he said that he attended last year before the election, a national security meeting with Trump personally in attendance and other foreign policy advisors, because this guy was appointed as a foreign policy advisor. And in that meeting, Papadopoulos told the group that he had connections to arrange a meeting between Trump and President Putin. So, you know, I mean, at a minimum, Trump knew that there was an interest here that Russia was, like, you know, offering to help, you know, do something with the election or give him either help with hacking or help with or give him the emails or something. But shortly after this is when I think when Trump went, had his press conference and said that crazy stuff about, hey, you know, if Russia has those emails, maybe they should share them with everybody. Hillary's 30,000 missing emails, right?
That was like, July, yeah. So backing up a bit, again, in January is when Papadopoulos interviewed with FBI. He starts lying. February, they interview him again. He's still lying and then starts deleting up, covering his tracks, sort of. Except, again, they'd already subpoenaed the Facebook records, so it's not like him deleting and did anything but him getting himself further in trouble. But now we're going back to 2016. And in March of 2016, he finds out that he's going to be added to the Trump campaign as a foreign policy advisor. Again, I would love to know like the pathway this happened. And I suspect that Manafort might be involved because the timing's pretty close.
I read that was around the time where Trump was having trouble like getting actual experts and people with experience like to join his team. So,
but like this is so far down the barrel that like you're better off just picking a random college student at this point.
That's true.
So to be fair though, this Papadopoulos somehow was advisor to Ben Carson.
Huh.
Yeah, I don't know how that works yet. Something to look into. But anyway, he then starts talking to some contact he has, apparently a close friend, I guess, or some kind of colleague, who's a Russian academic, and says, hey, look, I'm now part of the Trump campaign. Look at me. I'm a big deal. You should talk to me. And they start talking. And then March 24th, Papadopoulos goes to his campaign supervisor, which we believe, I think it's been confirmed, but I apologize if it's not. It's been a long day. Is Sam Clovis. And he tells them that he just met with his good friend who introduced him to Putin's niece and the Russian ambassador in London. And the topic of that meeting was to talk, is basically to figure out, to have Trump's campaign meet with Russian leadership and discuss what the Russia-U.S. relationship would look like under Trump. Clovis, our supervisor, was like, okay, that's a lot to, don't commit to anything yet. This is important, we should look at all this. And then he added to Papadopoulos, great work.
I can hear your feral cats.
Oh, God.
Hey. It's okay, though. I think it's cute. Keep going.
So, again, and so right after this is when they have this, as far as we know, maybe been the only in-person meeting between Trump and Papadopoulos, but again, it's early days. And in this group meeting about national security issues, quote unquote, Papadopoulos says, hey, I'm George Papadopoulos, and I have connections that can help Trump and President Putin arrange a meeting. We don't know what the response was to that, but apparently it wasn't negative, because after this, Papadopoulos is given regular updates to the Trump campaign and talking to the Russian nationals regularly.
On Facebook.
On Facebook, on emails, like right. All over the place. And it's pretty extensive. And the general tenor is like, this would be really historic. This would be great. We should definitely work together. I want to see what we can accomplish together. And both sides are like, this sounds good, but let's be careful how we do it. And I think, you know, I've seen names thrown about by who's who by this point. Until we actually have time to confirm all this. I'll leave that out for now.
So Papadopoulos is like the first to go down, basically.
The first we know of to go down. Okay. And he got off pretty light.
Right. I heard like it's like 0 to 6 months or maybe just probation or something.
Yeah. I mean, he got a sweetheart deal. But again, he didn't. A lot of times in these kind of things, the person who flips first, they get off scot-free. That's right. Like kind of the incentive. Like, look, talk to us, be a cooperator. You go home. Nothing happens to you. This guy, they're like, you cooperate with us and you're still going to be admitting to a felony, but you won't be like spending the next half a decade in prison. And so it wasn't like a, it was a good deal for him. I want to get
that straight. But he has possibly, so we, maybe for the last 3 or 4 months, been acting as somebody who could be helping them get information on others, wearing a wire, having, like,
that's speculation, but I think it's a pretty good speculation about what went on. Again, so he is arrested in July 27th, because it was right after Manafort had the early morning raid in Virginia. And then by October, they have a sealed sort of plea agreement. And it stays under seal because, as they said, the government said in the hearing, Your Honor, the criminal justice interest being vindicated here is there's a large-scale ongoing investigation of which this case is a small part.
Exciting.
Yeah, so they're being very clear that this is about a much larger investigation.
The net is huge, yeah.
Yeah, and for instance, in an affidavit submitted to the court, an FBI agent wrote, I am currently assigned to the ongoing investigation run by Special Counsel's Office into the Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. In that capacity, I've worked on the investigation of the defendant, and I continue to work on aspects of special counsel investigation related to defendant's statements. This guilty plea, if accepted, will result in the first criminal conviction arising from the special counsel's investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election. The investigation is ongoing and includes pursuing leads from information provided by and related to the defendant regarding communications he had, inter alia, with other certain individuals associated with the campaign. The government will very shortly seek, among other investigative steps, to interview certain individuals who have knowledge of contacts between Russian nationals or Russia-connected foreign nationals and the campaign, including, but not limited note, the contacts between the defendant and foreign nationals set forth in the statement of the offense for Papadopoulos' plea agreement. So again, what they're saying here is that this is actually a very small initial step in a much larger scheme. They are contemplating a larger operation, and they're asking the court to keep this plea secret because they have other people on the schedule that they're worried are going to get scared off if they know what happened here.
Papadopoulos is the worm. He is just the bait.
He's the first.
But here's the thing, Susan, let me ask you this, because I think it's clear, not just from this guilty plea, but also, I'm not trying to say that I'm handing this one to the administration, but even the indictments, that he pled guilty to lying. There doesn't seem to be any underlying, I mean, like, it's the cover-up is worse than the whatever, but I mean, like, there's no underlying crime that he's guilty of or has pled guilty to.
Because that was his deal. He gets the softest penalty they could give to him.
So here's my question. Would it have been a crime if he... I guess maybe
we don't know what he did. That's right. The whole point.
Right.
We don't know what, again, in this indictment, or not the statement of offense, they're not going to get into all the conduct went on, especially not conduct that's unrelated to what they're actually having him plead guilty to. But for instance, if, say, someone solicited stolen property,
right,
like stolen emails, then you could talk about criminal conduct.
Right.
So this is not just oh, the only thing wrong is the cover up.
But in the indictments, that's not one of the charges. I mean, it's interesting that the...
Because he flipped.
No, I'm talking about with Manafort and Gates. And we'll get into the actual counts. Yeah, but we all want that. We want the collusion.
We want to know what happened. And again, yeah. this is the Papadopoulos thing. That's nothing you do
right,
if you're not going somewhere big with this. Mm. And again, here's the thing that this should probably state up front. That Papadopoulos' plea, what he pled guilty to, and the facts in there constitutes collusion. That's not a legal term, again. But in terms of a factual matter, we now know for a fact that the Trump campaign worked extensively and closely with the Russian government in order to assist Trump in his election as U.S. president.
Okay, but do we know that? Or do we know that
we know that hands down. There's no question.
But let me ask you. To me, it seems like you couldn't possibly make the argument that they were open to it, but there's no evidence they actually did it.
What is did it, though? They talked about it a lot and said about how their plans were.
Meaning they didn't... Is there evidence that they actually got those emails? That they got any stolen information? It sounds like they were open to...
Oh, that's coming out. That's not here. That's not supposed to be here.
It's going to come later.
And being open to it, and then, again, they knew for a fact, both sides were talking, again, for at least 6 months here, regular communication, right, about their plans to meet and help Trump win the election. Mm-hmm. So even if it stops there, full stop, which it's not going to, but yeah. even if it did, that is them working together to help Trump win the election. Yeah. The fact that they may have sucked at it, that's not actually relevant in terms of what's going on here with Trump yeah. then denying for a year that he and Russia had anything to do with each other. Yeah. Especially now that Trump is still very late on actually implementing the like one legislative achievement that Congress has had this year, which is the Russian sanctions bill.
Right. I could be wrong here, but I would guess that that offer from Russia was not just to, hey, we've got some emails. You want to take a look and see if you can find some dirt, but also to go further. And, Jared Kushner has those companies that work on the digital stuff. I'm guessing there were probably offers to do some, I don't know, some.
Well, we know the Cambridge Analytica, which is the bizarre little like data analytics group that, you know, has Bannon connections and all that. We know they reached out to WikiLeaks in like March or April, and we're like, hey, do you need any help sorting those Hillary Clinton emails you got? And apparently, and maybe it's true, Julian Assange was like, no, I don't need your help, I got this.
It would be interesting if he got pulled into this too.
Oh, he's so in this. He's so involved in this.
Yeah. Susan, do you wear Bombas socks?
I do now. And I will say they make a difference. I don't know why, but I've kind of been of the opinion that for like running socks and whatnot, you can kind of just pick some up at like CVS and you're good to go.
CVS?
But, like, okay, I've never actually like spent time thinking about socks.
Yeah.
But Bombas has changed my mind because these are definitely way better.
Bombas became a sponsor, I think, of Undisclosed before, and now they're a sponsor of 45th, and it's great because they are like amazing. They did a really wonderful, and I actually am a sock person. I love socks. I love all kinds of socks. I own so many socks. I bought socks with the whole family, but when we got our first shipment of Bombas, I became a convert because they are the most comfortable socks that I've ever owned, to be honest. They're made from this beautiful premium cotton. They stay warm in the winter and they stay cool in the summer. So if you've got like sweaty, sticky feet, these are the socks for you.
And every pair comes with a built-in blister tab, innovative arch support, and stay-up technology, as well as a seamless toe. Seriously, they're not gonna fall down your shoes like all socks usually do. Especially if you're running, definitely get these.
One day when I start running, I'll try them out doing that.
Yeah, but even if you don't, get these.
When I'm walking, when I'm sitting, they work very, very well. And you know what? They've got gorgeous patterns, colors, length, styles. Like you said, they look great in the gym, but you know, they're great for like also office wear and out in the town. And they just have all kinds of styles. And for every purchase that you make from Bombas, they actually donate a pair to someone in need. So you know what? I mean, it's also a really ethical company, and I think that's great.
I can also confirm that they're totally great for sitting in a chair recording a podcast. They like right now.
I'm doing that right now too. I've got, because it's getting cold now. I've started to pull out the socks already. So you can buy one pair or four at bombas.com/45th today, and you will get 20% off your first purchase. And this is the season, folks. Stock up on your socks. That's Bombas, BOMBAS.com/45th for 20% off. Bombas.com/45th.
This kind of stuff doesn't exist in a vacuum. Like these facts here clearly lay out that the Trump campaign knew Russia wanted to help, and they were very interested in getting that help and took many, many active steps to make that help work. And you know what? If we did not live in a failing democracy, this would be the end of the Trump administration right now, today. It should have been over, you know, before it started. But this, the fact that they're spinning this now as proof of his political rival colluding with Russia.
Oh, my God. That's some unbelievable stuff. What is happening in the conservative media? I mean, I guess they must have had a heads up.
The conservative media is happening in the White House.
The White House, too. But, I mean, I'm talking about, like, the Fox and others. I mean, like, it started, like, maybe a week before the news of the indictment came down. Yeah. I mean, they must have had some heads up that this grand jury is about to, you know, indict these guys.
Well, to back up a bit, what we do know is that the plea with Papadopoulos was, I think, October 4th or 5th.
Okay.
And that's when they said they plan to have some pretty high level interviews in the Trump campaign. So that between then and now, those happened. I'm guessing that's what tipped off whatever set off this barrage of like Uranium One nonsense they got into.
The GPS dossier. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I don't even really understand the logic there. Like, what are they exactly arguing here that Hillary paid Russia to hack her emails? I'm like, what? I'm really confused. Maybe someone can explain it to me.
You can't, because there's literally nothing that holds these ideas together they're trying to put forward. It's bonkers. And it's all just transparent, authoritarian, like third world country kind of stuff. But again, this happened all throughout March to at least October. And what we know is that at no point, and despite what you would, if you watch Fox today, as I did God help me. This was not something that, so the way on Fox they spun this is that, like, this is a good thing for Trump because this indictment proves that when this youthful, low-level volunteer who got no money from us was, like, being a little bit too much of an eager beaver and brought these ideas to the Trump campaign said, no, naughty, naughty Papadopoulos, don't do that. Don't you dare conspire with Russia. Go away. That's how they portrayed it. Seriously, like, this is proof that they were, their word is rebuffed. This is not rebuffed. In fact, despite all the claims that, like, none of the meetings were accepted by the Trump campaign. The allegations clearly describe how it was the Trump campaign at times offering meetings to the Russians. And there's one line in particular, it's a footnote, footnote two, which I think is going to be a lot more information on that coming out in the next week or so. And it's about one of the emails. Papadopoulos sent an update and said, here's a request from Russia to for like Putin or the Russian government to meet Trump. Russia's very eager. Let's figure out a time for them to meet. And the footnote says, the government notes that the campaign official forwarded defendant Papadopoulos' email to another campaign official and stated, let's discuss. We need someone to communicate that DT is not doing these trips. Now, Fox stops there in reading and says, oh, look, it's, see, they're saying that we're not going to glue with Russia. So, like, let's make sure we communicate that. But the next line says, it should be someone low level in the campaign so as not to send any signal. Which definitely changes the entire tenor of what the point of that was. Now, I think we know now that this email is actually between Gates and Manafort, which means that there's a lot more about them and the Trump-Russia collusion to come out. But right at this point, they're not ready to disclose what it is.
Well, you think that's it's possible to do that like in separate charges?
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely. So this is, like, again, the question of whether there was collusion between Trump and Russia is over. That's very important to know how successful it might have been and what they actually did to do that. And we still need to figure all that out. But we know for a fact that both sides were doing it. And the possibility they may have sucked at it doesn't really change the equation in terms of the fact we now have a president that was willing to conspire with a foreign government that's very much at odds with the U.S.'s national interest to win the election.
I don't know how many times Trump tweeted today that there was no collusion.
Only twice. So here's the other. I don't know if, I mean, I probably, knowing what we know of Mueller so far, probably was intentional. But the Manafort and Gates indictment, which does not mention Trump, came out first. And Trump starts, like, I think he had like four question marks in his tweet. Is like, why is no one looking at Hillary? Someone do something. And then he says like a sort of like a follow up tweet. And also I didn't clue with Russia. Not seeming to have realized that, like, probably 10 minutes before that, the other big news of the day, the Papadopoulos plea deal, came out, which was all about Russian collusion.
Did you watch the presser today with the White House Secretary?
You mean the Daily Propaganda outlet? Yeah, that's insane. Like, I could not feel darker about the future of our country. If our existence was not currently imperiled, what we saw today would be the end of Sarah Sanders and the White House and hopefully the end of Trump. Because what happened today was the White House issued blatantly false accusations of, like, no factual basis and also no internal coherence whatsoever. Again, against political rival that makes their base angry.
Yeah, but I did think it was interesting that she said right off the bat, other than the weird beer, I don't know what that was, that.
I walked away. I was like, question. You know what? I got time for this today. So I did not actually hear that.
I was trying to follow, but I couldn't. I'm sleep deprived. But
I didn't try. I feel like that was a good call.
The first question though was, do you think, Mueller could be fired? Do you think, and she said, you know, no, at this point, our position is that that's just not under consideration. So I thought that was that because I thought really over the weekend, I thought this is it. This guy, like, Monday morning is going to wake up and be like, screw it. You're fired. I'm getting rid of you. And there's nothing really stopping him from doing that. I don't know if that could, because I don't have the confidence really in House leadership, GOP leadership, to, even if he were to do that, to try to impeach him or do anything. I mean, like, I feel like he could do it and get away with it.
Yeah, the odds are very good that he'll try and fire Mueller one way or another. Or as Bannon's campaign currently is to defund Mueller.
Right.
And so he's going to do that. And if it happens and when it happens, we take to the streets. Like, there's nothing like sustained national protest on a very visible and undeniable level is the only defense America has left.
You know, I feel like, do you remember like when, I can't remember when it was, because it just feels like one big, I don't know, it just feels like a decade of this at this point, when all the legislators were going back to their home states and getting swamped with thousands of protesters in the town halls and all that stuff. Nothing really happened. And, you know, that's what really worries me is like, okay, we take the streets, then what? Like, this is not the Arab Revolution. Like, this is not the Arab Spring. I don't know if any of that works anymore.
We don't, but it's all we got.
But it's all we got. Well, okay, so.
Again, every city needs to make the women's march marches look like child's play compared to the size of what this is. Like, that's the only, I mean, maybe it won't happen, but our democracy is hanging by a thread here. And this is the one resort that we currently have, given the fact that the Republicans in power have decided to abdicate their responsibility of seeing that America is not led by an idiot tyrant.
Well, I mean, if Mueller's fired, does that literally put the brakes on this entire train?
Yeah.
Wow. That's not good. Okay. Yeah. So should we move on to talk about the actual, what happened today? We got the indictment.
Yeah. So now it's the other side of the coin, which is the Manafort and Gates.
Yeah. And I actually didn't really know who Rick Gates was either until today. He was deputy chair of this campaign, of Trump's campaign, while Manafort was the campaign chairman. So they worked very closely, but apparently they have a 30-year-old relationship. They go back a long way. They're not just business partners. Manafort has been a mentor to him for many, many years. And they have very close ties to Russia and pro-Russian elements in Ukraine.
Well, I think you all saw today that President Donald Trump was correct. There is no evidence that Mr. Manafort or the Trump campaign colluded with the Russian government. Mr. Manafort represented pro-European Union campaigns for the Ukrainian. And in that, he was seeking to further democracy and to help the Ukraine come closer to the United States and the EU. Those activities ended in 2014, over 2 years before Mr. Manafort served in the Trump campaign. Today, you see an indictment brought by an Office of Special Counsel that is using a very novel theory to prosecute Mr. Manafort regarding a FARA filing. The United States government has only used that offense 6 times since 1966 and only resulted in 1 conviction. The second thing about this indictment that I myself find most ridiculous is a claim that maintaining offshore accounts to bring all your funds into the United States as a scheme to conceal from the United States government is ridiculous. Thank you.
I'm going to read a little blurb from the special counsel's office about today's what happened. It says Paul J. Manafort, 68, of Alexandria, Virginia, and Richard W. Gates, the 3rd, 45, of Richmond, Virginia, have been indicted by a federal grand jury on October 27, 2017, in the District of Columbia. The indictment contains 12 counts. Conspiracy against the United States, conspiracy to launder money, unregistered agent of a foreign principal, false and misleading FARA statements, false statements, and 7 counts of failure to file reports of foreign bank and financial accounts. Did you look at the counts? Did you get a chance to look at this this indictment?
Yes, and it's basically, I mean, a lot of it's what we kind of outlined in the other episode where we addressed the Manafort issues.
Yeah.
It's, again, there's the first count is money laundering involving Ukraine. And the second count is the FARA violation, which again is the Foreign Agent Registration Act. Basically, you're supposed to, if you're a foreign agent, you have to file like a disclosure, and he didn't do it.
And they also, there are like counts 3 to 6 and 7 and 9 in 2 different time periods are related to file reports for having foreign bank accounts, which also is basically just a statutory requirement, and they did not do that. And I think on top of all these failures, then they actually lied. And that's the other big part of this, is that when the investigation began last year and DOJ began contacting them about this, they then tried to cover it up. So I want to talk a little bit about the basic allegations and kind of the facts of what happened here. And, you know, like you said, you've covered this before, but just to give folks a little primer. So the basic allegation is that they received, in terms of laundering, tens of millions of dollars for their pro-Russia Ukraine work because they were lobbying basically for a pro-Russian candidate, to me, which is just Putin. I mean, like, at the end of the day, it doesn't say Putin anywhere, but yeah, this is a candidate who is, you know, a Putin puppet to run in the Ukrainian elections. The guy actually won in 2010, and then in 2014, he fled the country. But anyway, so the Manafort and Gates were acting as lobbyists for this guy and his party, and they got lots and lots of money for that, and they did not report that income. Then they laundered it through scores of U.S. and foreign corporations, partnerships, and bank accounts. I mean, if you look at the number of just corporations that they have register in the United States. Let me see. I have this here. They've got 17 domestic entities controlled. That's like 17 corporations that are controlled and owned by Manafort and Gates in the United States. There's 12 in Cyprus, and there's 3 in other foreign countries. That's a lot. That's like more than 30 different corporations that they use to launder this money. And so it's a very complicated scheme.
Yeah. He has a lot of ways of laundering money. The one they focus on the most in this indictment is, I mean, it's probably because it's easiest to prove, but it's pretty, I mean, the activities alleged in this count, these claims, is pretty simple. He gets his money paid for by Ukraine, and it gets, the cash goes to
offshore accounts.
Shady banks, which then goes to Manafort's offshore accounts. And when you get income, whether it's income for lawful activities or income for unlawful activities, you're still liable to paying taxes on it. And as an American, it doesn't matter where the income comes from. You're paying taxes on it, unless you're Paul Manafort, in which case you just use these offshore bank accounts as a way to disperse money to pay for your little toys. So he never declared his income. He just said, for instance, after he spends a hard year of helping this authoritarian Putin puppet get power in Ukraine and loot the economy there, he had his pay shipped to one of his companies. Let's take Loab, because that's a pretty important one. It's based in Cyprus, and the money sits in that Cyprus bank account until, for instance, Manafort decides he wants a new fancy rug.
Right.
He spent like $1 million on fancy rugs.
A lot. And clothes.
I have to guess it has to be family members. But who knows? Actually, his nice suits.
Over $1 million.
I did see Roger Stone was insulting Manafort's suit. So maybe maybe it wasn't for him himself. It was for like Range Rovers and, you know, Hamptons and Mercedes-Benzes and like all kinds of stuff. So again,
It's pretty detailed. The indictment's pretty detailed if you guys want to actually read like what he spent all the money on. But go ahead.
Instead of taking money like into his quote-unquote real bank accounts and then paying taxes on it and paying what's left to buy his toys, he just paid people directly from these offshore bank accounts. So it never got taxed in the U.S. And again, like we're talking like, as the state propaganda network decided to put it today, if Manafort's guilty of anything, it's of living a lavish lifestyle.
Well, you know, they actually use that language in the indictment. I thought it was actually interesting that they enumerate. I mean, I wonder why they, I mean.
Because juries hate that shit.
That's what it was like. They didn't have to phrase it like that. And another thing that was interesting to me was another way that he laundered the money is that he would use this money to buy properties in the United States, like directly in cash. And then he would borrow millions of dollars from U.S. banks against those properties, using them as collateral, right? So now he's got all this cash in the U.S., hasn't reported it, hasn't paid taxes on that income. And then he apparently would defraud the institution that loaned the money. And I mean, like, just like this one big cycle. But what amazes me about people like that is, like, it's really about greed. It's like this endless pit of greed. It's like, how much money is enough for folks like you? I don't understand.
Well, he didn't get all the money he was due. So apparently, maybe if Ukraine had paid him everything they're supposed to pay him.
Manafort, he did owe a lot of money, right? He owed a lot of...
He wasn't owed money by the Ukraine. Because, again, his little Putin puppet got kicked off the throne and had to go flee to exile in Moscow. So,
but they were also accused of having stolen $19 million from...
He was owed more. Oh, from the Oleg Deripaska thing? Yeah, that's
exactly
different.
Yeah, there's that.
We don't know the whole story there. I am still convinced that this is not confirmed anywhere. It's just my gut feeling. That was all part of a money laundering for hire scheme. I don't think Manafort actually owes any money to Deripaska. I don't think Deripaska feels like he's owed money from Manafort. That's just the way they're trying to launder the money.
Got it.
Using lawsuits and like fake debts and fake loans.
Maybe, sure.
So who knows what's going on there? I'm sure we'll find out before long. But going back to the defrauding the bank institutions, what we do know, and this is part comes again from his daughter's text messages, there was a money crisis in about 2015, 2014, for whatever reason, and again, mostly related to the fact that Yanukovych had to take exile in Moscow, he wasn't getting paid, and he needed money badly. So one way he seems to have solved his cash flow problem is to do this false loan thing. He took one of the brownstones he bought with the laundered money, and he said to the bank, hey, I'm going to renovate this house. Can I get a house renovation loan? Bank says, sure. But then he just used the money to pay off another house somewhere else in California or something. But apparently, sometime after that raid in July, and this is years after the loan's taken out, Manafort decides he needs to fix this appearance problem and very quickly hires a contractor to do renovations on the house in like a 2-week turnaround time period.
A lot of landscaping, like so much landscaping.
Yeah, and be like, okay, here's what I was doing all along. Like,
right.
like, I just, you know, didn't get around to those home renos until like,
it's until like just a coincidence. Hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of landscaping in a matter of weeks. I mean, look, the indictment alleges that he has laundered, him and Gates, $18 million. That's a lot. That's
more than that. That's what they like took from, that was like from their own like personal right. spending.
Their own.
Not just
right.
laundering. Yeah.
For others. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it says more than $75 million flowed through the offshore account. So, I mean, yeah.
And so here's the far stuff. I'll only touch on it briefly because I did go into detail on it in the earlier episode. But what that's all about is that they did want to have U.S. lobbyists promoting their interest in Ukraine.
Right.
But they didn't want to have to do FARA filings about like who was doing this and why they were doing it. So what the decision was to take two U.S.-based, experienced foreign lobbyers, Mercury and Podesta Group, and tell them, look, we're going to get you money through this like fake nonprofit we're setting up called like European Center for a Modern Ukraine. And that's Mercury and Podesta. And we're going to say that this is just like totally independent nonprofits not being funded by Yanukovych's government. So you don't have to declare yourselves as foreign lobbyists, which is what they did. So neither of those groups until very recently filed FAR registrations, even though it was abundantly transparent to all involved that, yeah, the money was actually coming from Yanukovych and yeah, they should have filed under FARA. Again, Manafort and Gates work to make this like cover story that the money that's funding these U.S. lobbyists is coming from the European Center for Modern Ukraine and not from Yanukovych. But that has all now come out in the open.
Right. And on top of that, when DOJ started investigating this, when Mueller started investigating this, they actually apparently communicated with these companies and gave them talking points on how to evade like disclosure of the fact that they were actually the ones directing all of this activity. So once again, the cover up is going to bite them in the ass pretty bad.
Yeah, this was planned. I mean, and also in their defense, who could have possibly known in 2012 that this would all become part of a scandal for President Trump to collude with Russia during the election to win?
I mean, that's like, a whole different part of it. But yeah, they still got
what
they...
I'm not going to blame them for not seeing that one in advance, you know?
Yeah, it's hard for me to like give a pass to like Putin puppets, to be honest. I mean, I think
mean, just
these
saying
are
that,
very,
like,
very shitty. Yeah,
no, I feel like it is no failing of theirs that they did not foresee this is the way in which their scheme would totally blow up in their faces.
One more way to keep warm this winter is by drinking wine. I've heard liquor warms you up. Now, see, I'm a teetotaler. I wouldn't know. But Susan, tell me all about it.
I have no opinion on whether it's good for cold weather, but okay. I just say it's good in general weather. If you're like me, you don't know much about wine other than that some is good and you like it and it's nice to have at dinner, but don't particularly know about, I don't know, nose or glens or all that fancy stuff. And most of what you care about is, does it taste good? Luckily, I found First Leaf, the only wine club that's based on your taste. I just received my first First Leaf order, and these are some really good wines. Here's how it works. You customize your First Leaf order by selecting the color, wine regions, and frequency of wine shipments. And then First Leaf puts together a 3-pack of wine based on your taste to get you started. The three I got were based on what they asked me about what I generally like, and they were exactly right. They were all excellent wines, and far better than what I usually drink. And again, like, if you just want to know what a good wine to try that matches your taste, this is perfect. And when your bottles arrive, you rate those too, and it helps it figure out even more what to send you in the future. The more wines you rate, the better your recommendations will be.
And they're really affordable too, right?
Yeah, and they're not, like, you're not talking the fanciest priced wines here. It's just good wine at a reasonable price and lets you know what you're looking for without trying to read reviews that mean nothing to you, if you're me. First Leaf also eliminates the middleman and works directly with the world's foremost wineries in France, Italy, and Napa Valley. They are my new favorite way by far, and also only way, to rate and buy quality wine. So to order your 3-pack of introductory wines for $15, go to tryfirstleaf.com/45th. That's 45th. That's 3 bottles of wine for only $15 at tryfirstleaf.com/45th. Experience First Leaf today at tryfirstleaf.com/45th. You won't regret it.
What's amazing here is how transparent all this was. I don't think it would, this is the kind of like newspaper outlets you were talking about this months ago. This stuff was out in the open. It was, you know, like,
open.
Yeah, this is not like a very well thought out criminal scheme by these guys, but they got away with this kind of stuff for a long time. I can imagine there are dozens of others who are going to go down in similar schemes.
I am very curious to know what the, I mean, it's hard to know from the outside. And again, this was not a political issue until after the Trump campaign. Yeah. But I am curious what the internal deliberations were like on the DOJ side for why they didn't pursue Manafort sooner. This would not have been, they were looking at him. They were clearly considering moving ahead here, but they never pulled the trigger and went for an indictment. And I'd love to know what, I'm sure they had reasons. I don't know if they're good ones, but I'm sure they had some reason for why they never actually moved ahead on it. But this was always out there, and having him on the campaign was monumentally stupid. But an important point, and again, if you watch Fox News today, God help you if you did like me, what you'd have heard probably a dozen times, and that's a very conservative estimate, is, well, what today has proven is that there's no connection between Manafort's bad activities and the Trump campaign, because that was all years before and totally related to Trump. And
it's like the Twilight Zone. It's amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
But it ain't going to stay that way. What Mueller's doing here is these charges, that's again, the reason why our show and every outlet out there has already talked about in detail what's going on with this money laundering is because it was open and shut case. They money laundered.
Right.
I mean, these are hard cases to prove. The intent is always difficult. Like
the conspiracy part, maybe, but I feel like they left a trail there too. I mean, like,
yeah, this is in the world of like money laundering, this is a pretty open and shut case.
Yeah.
So that's why he's starting here. Like, it's a serious, it's a crime. It, even independent of anything to do with Trump, it is a crime that should be pursued and should have probably been pursued sooner. Again, not knowing the reasons why they declined to earlier, but it is open and shut. So it's safe to bring, it puts pressure on Manafort, and it shows that they're serious here. And it makes sense. I can only imagine how many potential crimes they found evidence of at this point, but why pursue anything other than the ones that are slam dunks until you have time to develop your case and flip more people and get more information?
I'm also wondering, like, strategically, who comes next? Like, I mean, they're building, like, one on another on another. And
speaking of slam dunk cases, there's one we're missing here.
Which one?
Flynn.
Yeah, I was thinking. And Paige.
Oh, Paige. Yeah, Paige, like, dude, that guy is... I don't feel bad for him, but I guess I do, because every time I see him, I'm just like, oh, honey, get a lawyer right now. Please, yeah. Listen to him. Just stop talking. Don't talk
stop
ever again.
Talking. I know.
I mean, I don't feel bad for him, but something doesn't seem quite...
He just seems like
a danger to himself and hard on, like, I feel bad like venturing this statement I'm gonna make, but like reading his letters, it does not read like someone who's totally mentally stable. Which is probably why I feel some degree of ill-advised sympathy towards him.
Well, look, everybody deserves a defense anyways, and yes, and competent counsel, so he should probably have that. But what about Stone? What about Roger Stone?
Oh, I'm sure his time in the barrel's coming up. But for Flynn, again, there were very easy, straightforward, ironclad charges they could have brought against him. Flynn's deals with Altekin and the whole Turkey lobbying thing, yeah, that's pretty black and white. It's in writing. It's in disclosures. It's not really going to be a hard case to prove. So why didn't they bring it? Why did they choose to bring the slam dunk?
I think it's because Flynn then did do his delayed filings as a foreign agent. He didn't do it initially.
Fix bribery. There were kickbacks to Altekin listed in his disclosures. The FARA charges against him probably won't be as important because I have no idea. But I don't think I've seen anything as strongly pointing towards like a conspiracy to like defraud FARA by not like getting a cover story together. He just didn't do it straight up. But the other stuff, yeah. So and again, we don't know the whole picture here. We don't know what Mueller's universe looks like or what reasons he could have taken certain actions. But I am very much more after today inclined to think that Flynn's reached a deal already.
And I've heard Flynn Jr. is also vulnerable. So, yeah.
I mean, Flynn had a million and one reasons to flip, and like money, but probably more than anything, his son.
Yeah, he's been pretty quiet lately. So I haven't heard much about him. But today they did both appear in court in D.C. and pled not guilty. They were, I think, given bail of $5 million and $10 million, respectively, with a Manafort getting $10 million.
They can probably have the money wired from the account.
I was going to say, I mean, to me, that seems kind of low. I mean, considering, like, they probably spent, drop that much on, like, landscape lighting.
Let's just say they're not going to wire it from, like, one of their accounts in Belize.
Well, they are under house arrest right now, is what I understand. And apparently, at some point during the hearing, but apparently during today's appearance, one of the defense attorneys mentioned pleading the fifth, his client, like, raised it at least, and I don't know what happened there. But they face some significant prison time. Apparently, Manafort faces between 151 and 181 months, and Gates faces 121 to 151 months. That's a lot of months. So anyhow, they're under a house arrest, and I think there's a hearing scheduled for November 3rd later this week. So that's not too far away.
Yeah. And for everyone who thinks that like it's taken a while to get here,
It's probably pretty fast, I think.
Oh my God. In the world of like white collar financial crimes, this is lightning speed. My God. Like these cases can like drag on for like for years for no good reason. And, like you're like, what? Like this is insanely fast. Mueller has a tight ship. He's got a plan. He's moving along. They're not, as far as I can see, they're not delaying in the slightest. I don't know how they could possibly have time to have moved any faster than they have.
Do you think tomorrow, though, Trump could just say, well, bring on the whatever. I don't care. I'm just going to pardon them all anyways. Then what?
I mean, these are also like untested constitutional issues about the exact extent of the president's pardon power, because, again, our Constitution did not well, I think the whole theory was that if a president decided to do this kind of shit, there'd be a Congress in place to be like, oh, hell no. And that's currently not going to happen. So he could. I mean, again, there's a question if one legally he can issue a pardon for these kind of unindicted crimes. Like, or what point can you issue a pardon? What's the effect of the pardon if someone hasn't even been indicted yet?
Right. Right.
And then there's the political ramifications, which would be messy and horrible. I mean, there's no good outcomes anymore. There haven't been in a long time. All our choices have been between variations of shit.
Although I will say, Flake gave that rousing speech last week, calling on the GOP to rise.
Yeah, you know what? I get that politically, the smart move is to like welcome the Republicans in from the cold. So yeah, the people in power should probably do that. But in terms of like all honesty, like they don't deserve a bit of it, and they're all cowards. I mean, the only action they have taken, the whole lot of them, is to quit their jobs.
Right. Right.
Like that's their response. They're like, oh, I don't like what's going here, so I'm not going to run for election again. Okay, so literally that, he did nothing to stop Trump. He just quit.
That or they're really scared. They're really scared of the base. They're really scared of like, you know, facing another election and what this could mean for them. And I mean, they really feel intimidated by like this faction of the party.
But they're doing nothing to stop it. They're just, you know, throwing in the towel.
That is true. All right. So anything else we want to talk about other than I'm sure Trump will be tweeting furiously for the next, I don't know.
Hopefully his attorney is going to be like getting a hold of that, because every time he tweets, he's making things worse for himself. I think the best part of Fox News today was when at one point the anchors start speculating. They're like, I have to imagine that Ty Cobb, Trump's attorney, talked to him and said, please, Mr. President, I know this is frustrating and unfair to you, and I know it's bad, but stop the tweeting. Just stop. And like, you are not talking about like your imagined conversation between Trump and Ty Cobb. You're talking about what you want Trump to do.
Yeah.
Which is probably what his attorneys want him to do too, because his tweeting's insane.
It is. But you know what? I think, you know, Trump is just, it's going to be something. He is going to act out some way. It's going to be either to tweet or he's going to fire some people. Or, I mean, something's going to happen. Yeah. This man can't keep a lid on his, you know.
Yeah, he will act. You're right. Something, I don't know if, maybe they'll steal his phone, but it's going to be something bad. And God help us. Hopefully it's not to bomb North Korea.
I have totally forgot about North Korea, but thanks for reminding me about that.
Something's gonna happen. Like, this is a scary time. Like,
I think you're right. I think
we're joking about it because we have to, but like, this is very terrifying, and the future of our country,
he's not stable. He could really do something dangerous just to deflect from all of this and act out, basically. Has Paul Ryan said anything? Has anybody
Paul Ryan. Okay, so here again, early signs of like how the GOP Congress is not gonna do anything to stop our suicidal hurdle towards destruction. Paul Ryan issued a statement like, I have not read the indictments and I don't want to give a statement something I haven't read. You goddamn coward.
Okay. I mean, it's not that long. It took like 15, 20 minutes to review it. But, you know.
He's a coward and a moral simpleton who is abdicating his duty to the American people.
What about anybody else? What about anybody else? That's right. It's not just him. It's like, there's so many others. You know, Mitch McConnell, there's McCain. I mean, anybody else said anything at all?
We are very short in heroes right now.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess that's it then.
Yep. So I'm sure that we have a insane week ahead of us, insane months ahead of us. This is very, very far from the end. And I mean, I'm very worried. I very sincerely believe there are no good outcomes from here on out, but some outcomes are worse than others. And I hope we somehow find a way to muddle through the less bad versions of our future.
You know what? I mean, like, I'm still holding out hope that at some point he's just going to throw in the towel and say, I'm walking away from all this. I resign. I'm just fleeing to Russia to take asylum forever.
Look, if the Yanukovych path holds true, here's what's next. He does indict Hillary. He sends her to prison. Then something happens and he loses power and flees to Moscow and Hillary goes free. That's the Yanukovych path. So who knows?
That's true. That's kind of what happened there. Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, thanks so much, everybody, for joining us this week. And stay tuned. The story is just starting to unfold. We'll be back next week with more news on it. Thanks so much, Susan. A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. And guess what? You can even leave us a voice message. Call us at 202-670-8345, and you never know, we might just play your message on the air. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.
Yeah, so we just got done recording our episode, and while figuring out some technical stuff, I checked the news again to see what happened in the, you know, the hour we're recording, and it turns out we have an update on the Carter Page front.
Oh, where'd he come from? Poor soul.
Guess who's appearing live on set to interview with the media? Carter Page on Chris Hayes' show.
My God.
I mean, I can't
right
say
right now it's happening or tonight?
I think, like, right now, like, basically soon. So it's not going to be pretty. Nothing he does is pretty. And, you know, it's probably better for the investigation and the popcorn value that he does do this, but a tiny part of me is like, boy, that.
Does he not have a lawyer? What's
happening?
I don't
know. I think he has one. He's ignoring them. It kind of hurts my soul. But you know what? It's good. Just put it in the open, because Carter Page sure will.
Well, when we pop off, I'll go check that out. Interesting. Chris Hayes, huh?